Since I had done the Memorial Day homily, I thought it was only fitting to bookend the summer by volunteering to do the Labor Day homily as well. I honestly can't believe that the summer is almost over. I don't know about you, but I still have a lot more summer left in me. But our kids are back at school, and fall is fast approaching. I am certainly not sorry that I volunteered to do today's homily, but I have to admit that today's gospel is in many ways one of the most difficult passages to interpret in the whole of Matthew's gospel. Its difficulty lies in the undoubted fact that it does not ring true. I mean, wait a minute. This just doesn't sound like Jesus. It sounds much more like the regulations of an ecclesiastical committee. And I'd like to suggest that it doesn't seem possible that Jesus said this in its present form. Let's begin unpacking with what Matthew has written. It would seem highly unlikely that Jesus would have told his disciples to take things to the church because the church did not exist as yet. And the passage goes on to imply that the church is fully developed and organized with a system of ecclesiastical discipline. What is more, it speaks of tax collectors and Gentiles as irreclaimable outsiders. Yet Jesus was accused of being the friend of tax collectors and sinners, wasn't he? And he never spoke of them as homeless outsiders, but always with sympathy and love, and even with praise. Further, the whole tone of the passage is that there is a limit to forgiveness, that there comes a time when a man may be abandoned as beyond hope, which is pretty impossible to think of Jesus saying. It seems that most biblical interpreters believe that our gospel reading this morning really wasn't a message that Jesus was delivering to his disciples, as Matthew suggested, but that it was a message that the author of Matthew felt he needed to deliver to his own church. So now we're getting to the crux of the issue. Conflicts have arisen among some of the members of Matthew's congregation, and he wants to restore the peace. But how is he going to accomplish this? He then recalls something that Jesus had said in the past, perhaps a message that said, "If anyone sins against you, spare no effort to make that man admit his fault and to get things right again between you and him." Here Jesus is using the word sin as being broadly defined as an act that causes injury to another, be it physical or spiritual injury. Now we can see perhaps what might have motivated the author of Matthew to write what he did in this part of the gospel. His church was in trouble. But the next question is, what is Matthew trying to say in this passage? He writes that Jesus has offered a formula by which we might either be reconciled with one another or end the relationship altogether. This formula says that when one offends me, I am to approach that person and ask that the offense be acknowledged. Hopefully, it is acknowledged and the relationship is restored and we are reconciled. But if not, then I need to bring two witnesses with me and confront the offender again. Then, hopefully, the relationship is restored. If I and two witnesses cannot convince the offender, then the whole church is supposed to be brought in. And if that person refuses to listen even to the church, then let such a person be to you as a Gentile or a tax collector. Those are pretty strong words. This method of seeking reconciliation has some merit, but it is potentially flawed, which is why many don't think that Jesus recommended it in the first place. From Paul's letters, we know that the early church was rife with conflict, and they had to find a means of achieving reconciliation or eliminating the disruptive elements. The process put forth in Matthew is an either-or proposition. If the process results in the ejection of the offending person from the church, the accuser may get what he asked for, but then the church will have failed. So let's consider this in another setting. Jesus told his followers that if they had a grudge against another, before they go forward to the altar seeking God's forgiveness, they should lay down their sacrificial offering and go to that person and be reconciled. And once reconciled, then go back to the altar and complete the ritual of confession and forgiveness. In other words, before asking God for forgiveness, Jesus says we are to forgive those who have offended us so that we will be ready to receive God's forgiveness. This is not an injunction to abandon a man, as Matthew's method would have you do so. It is a challenge to win him with the love which can touch even the hardest of hearts. Jesus Christ has found no man ever to be hopeless. In Jesus' mind, forgiveness and grace were paramount. Love your enemy. Forgive those who do wrong to you. Forgive not once, not seven times, but 70 times seven. If your enemy slaps you, then turn your face to the other side so that he may slap the other. That's what our loving Jesus says. Here is a story that I hope illustrates this point. Two friends were walking through the desert. During some point of the journey, they had an argument, and one friend slapped the other one in the face. The one who got slapped was hurt, but without saying anything, wrote in the sand, "Today my best friend slapped me in the face." They kept walking until they found an oasis where they decided to take a bath. The one who had been slapped got stuck in the mire and started drowning, but the friend saved him. After he recovered from the near drowning, he wrote on a stone, "Today my best friend saved my life." The friend who had been both slapped and saved his best friend asked him, "After I hurt you, you wrote in the sand, and now you write on stone. Why?" The other friend replied, "When someone hurts us, we should write it down in sand where winds of forgiveness can erase it away. But when someone does something good for us, we must engrave it in stone where no wind can ever erase it." We are encouraged to learn to write our hurts in the sand and to carve our blessings in stone. I hope that our delving a bit deeper into the motivations of Matthew we can understand now that he is a man passionately trying to keep his church community together. There are many reasons to make us think that this passage, as it stands, cannot be a correct report of the words of Jesus, but an adaptation made by the church in later days, when church discipline was rather a thing of rules and regulations than of love and forgiveness. And our steadfast message is that by his life and teachings, Jesus leads us back into right relationship with God. He calls us to be reconciled with God, and he calls us to be reconciled with one another.